attorney for this last case a couple of minutes to settle, get the materials together. You don't have to leave the bench. She just wants to get...
Well, that's what we're doing.
Okay, yeah. Okay. She just wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
All right, great.
Everybody's in and out.
Excuse me?
Just wait till everybody's settled.
Absolutely.
All right, go ahead.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. The issue before the court today is whether the Secretary has marshaled substantial support in the record for her conclusion that PMOI remains a terrorist organization. Today's PMOI is unique among foreign terrorist organizations that have petitioned this court. It represents the principal opposition to the current tyrannical regime in Tehran. It is totally committed to democratic, secular, non-nuclear Iran at peace with its neighbors. The administrative summary describes a PMOI as a Marxist Islamist organization. Those descriptions are totally wrong. Its platform is committed to protection of private property and to free enterprise. It's far from Islamist. It rejects the Sharia. It wants a secular state, separation of church and state. It's the opposite of Islamist. The Secretary also seeks to denigrate PMOI's status as a principal Iranian opposition group, but I think that's belied by the extraordinary amicus support that has appeared before this court today with 264 European parliamentarians.
Well, the Secretary's decision has to be based on the administrative record.
That's right? Correct.
Okay. Could you just explain, when did you receive portions of the unclassified record? Did you receive anything before the January 09 decision at all?
No, we didn't receive anything. We made a submission.
What happened at the October 8th meeting? Was any information turned over to you then? Any unclassified information?
I don't know how much unclassified information was revealed. I do know that there are a lot of things in the unclassified administrative summary that we did not have a chance to respond to, including some allegations that were only revealed with the government's filing of its own brief in this court.
You mean the supplemental filing?
Supplemental filing, right.
Uh-huh.
So there's material that we have not had a chance to respond to. Now, I don't think the court gets to that issue unless it finds that the administrative record contains substantial support for the Secretary's action.
What does the law require us to do if the unclassified material appears insufficient to sustain the Secretary's
judgment? Is insufficient, did you say?
It appears insufficient to sustain the Secretary's...
I think the law requires you to review the classified information yourselves, and I think you should look at it with a searching scrutiny, and I want to talk a little bit about the standard of review in a minute. But I think that there is a question before the court. There's a motion for access to classified information or some substitute for that. And we believe that what we've gotten so far is inadequate and there should be more. However, my main submission today is that the administrative record, parts of which, of course, we haven't seen, does not provide substantial support and that we don't really need to get to the question of our access to classified information.
Well, but suppose you're right that the unclassified record is insufficient. But that the classified record is.
Is sufficient?
Uh-huh.
Well,
and
first
our case,
question is...
And our case law pretty clearly says NCRI, PMOI-2 and NCRI-2 pretty clearly say that you have no right to the classified information.
But they don't say there isn't a right to the alternative remedies, such as being provided with an administrative, not unclassified summary of the classified information, or the appointment of a special master. But I'd like to come.
But what would the special master do that we couldn't do? We look at the unclassified record. I mean, the classified record.
Well,
what would a special master add?
Well, before the special master looked at the classified information, he or she could meet with us, and we could talk about some of the things that we think might be in there and some of the responses.
You can tell us that, too.
Hmm?
You can tell us that, too.
Well, we could.
Right.
We had space limitations, and I have time limitations, and we would have been speculating and playing.
But wouldn't you have been speculating also with the special master?
Hmm?
You would be speculating just as much.
We would, but we would help the special master to have meaningful review, as the courts recognized in Bismola and Aloda, the lack of an adversarial presentation handicaps the court in its ability to make the decision. So,
let me ask you about your burden, because under your petition for revocation requires you, that is, you must provide evidence that relevant circumstances are sufficiently different from those circumstances that form the basis for the designation. And I have one question to begin with, and that is, have you anywhere assured that the only PMOI members are these 3,400 or 3,800 people in Camp Ashraf? And if you haven't, and I don't believe you have, is there any affirmative evidence that their supporters or their members who are or may be anywhere in the world have forsworn violence and so forth?
Well, the organization, I can't speak to the individual members who might be in Iran or in the United States for that matter. The organization has forsworn violence. Its leadership has forsworn violence. The 3,400 members at Ashraf have signed. And this is, and you don't have to rely on our talk. We not only talk the talk, but we walk the walk. There have been no terrorist actions undertaken for 8 years by PMOI. Now, if we were still committed or interested in engaging in violent activities for political purposes, why haven't we, the people you're talking about?
Well, the statute, have done so. There's two parts to the statute, though. One part is, of part two is engaged in terrorist activities, and the other is retains the ability and intent.
Yes.
And
that's
that,
right.
By definition, presumes that there wouldn't be any terrorist activities, but yet you could still remain classified if
you
the organization,
could.
Right? That's the way the statute's written.
Yes, but I think that it's not enough for the Secretary to speculate. There has to be some concrete evidence, some substantial support for that conclusion.
Well, but suppose in the classified section there's substantial support for the proposition that the organization retains the ability and intent.
I can't deny, Your Honor, that if there's real concrete and substantial evidence to that effect, which we are quite confident there can't be.
I understand that. But in that case, you wouldn't need evidence of actual terrorist activity, right?
I think that's right. Yeah. There are alternative bases. Let me come to what the Secretary said was her ground for decision with regard to the terrorist activity or intent. She summed up her ground at Joint Appendix 16, which is page 14 of the administrative summary, said as follows, I quote, MEK's proffered evidence of changed circumstances is not sufficient to justify revocation given the MEK's history and the serious harm that any continuing terrorist activities could cause. Now, that, I think, is plainly legally insufficient, as that is the stated basis for the decision. The history is old.
Right.
The fact that terrorist activities are bad if they happen could be said of the Girl Scouts. It could be said of any organization. It doesn't say this organization is likely to or planning to engage in terrorist activities.
But the Secretary's decision is based on a partially classified record. So,
of course.
So the Secretary couldn't be any more specific than that.
Well, I think she could. She has disclosed certain things now in the supplemental record.
Right.
So she could disclose the. I have a little difficulty understanding why it should be classified if we have been involved in the assassination of some Iranian official in the last few years. Why that fact would have to be classified, I don't understand. I understand why the sources of the information might be classified. Let me say that the State Department has taken the position you talk about whether there have to be acts, and of course the absence of acts is some substantial evidence of likely intent or state of mind, just as the presence of acts is. In dealing with the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine, this is quoted at page 31 of our brief, the State Department said, we look at the facts based on the statute of whether an organization is involved in terrorist activity over the past 2 years. If they are not, then they will be dropped from the books, and that is what happened with the DFLP. And with regard to the Japanese Red Army, Secretary Powell said he remained concerned about their potential for renewed terrorist activity, will continue to monitor them closely, but because he had not received sufficient information during the past 2 years to justify the designation, he was delisting them. Now, we've got 8 years, I believe, of a clean record. The State Department, I think, is not being consistent. Let me mention one other thing about the statute, and I'm sure the court is aware that the statute is written in the present tense, so the intention or the actions have to be relatively current. They can't be this past history that the Secretary relied on. It's also a purpose of the statute to encourage organizations like PMOI to cease their terrorist activities so that they can get off the list and get back to participating in the political debate with which PMOI is so concerned and from which it's been shut out in the United States. Now, let me say some things about the standard of review of this court, and time is short. I tried to save 3 minutes for rebuttal, but first of all, the court is to look at the record as a whole, and the record as a whole includes powerful evidence submitted by PMOI of its disavowal of violence, its discontinuation of violent activities, its disbandment of the National Liberation Army.
It doesn't have to look at the record as a whole.
Excuse me?
It can look at the record as a whole or classified information submitted to the court.
That's part of the record as a whole that the court gets.
Lacking substantial support in the administrative record taken as a whole or in classified information submitted to the court.
Yes, my point is that about taken as a whole, my point is that you have to consider the strength of our evidence, and if the evidence that we've submitted powerfully shows substantial change, then what's required to be substantial evidence to reject it has to be greater. It can be in the classified portion of the record. The court needs to look behind the conclusory assertions, and what we've seen that's been declassified is largely conclusory assertions. And if you look at MEK-14, which is one of the documents that was declassified, they talk about limited information, limited capability. The word limited appears 5 times in that document, and yet the test is substantial evidence. Now, I suppose it could be limited and still substantial, but there's some tension in those two concepts. And MEK-11, which has to do with allegations about plans for bombing in the international zone in Baghdad, they describe the source as unknown, and as such, their access, veracity, and motivations were unknown. Now, that kind of thing does not constitute substantial evidence. I in fact, have serious doubts that the classified information contains substantial evidence for a couple of reasons. One
well, what,
is
what do you do with our decision, our decision in PMOI 1, which says that the court said, we reach no judgment whatsoever regarding whether the material is or is not true.
Well, I
instead, as we see it, our only choice is to see whether, based on the face, she had enough evidence. So does that give us the freedom to say, because of a disclaimer like that, we can hold that that's not the kind of evidence the secretary can rely on?
I guess I would say two things. One is I think that language is dictum, but even accepting that, because it was unnecessary to the decision in PMOI-1, but even accepting that language, I think the court's task is the same. You have to ask yourself, looking at the information, whether it's the kind of information that a reasonable decision maker could rely upon, and whether taken in totality, all the information that a reasonable decision maker could rely upon constitutes substantial support for the secretary's decision. Now, I don't think that's the case. See, I'm running out of time. I wanted to talk about a couple of the examples.
All right, we'll give you some time in response.
There's an allegation that's been disclosed about planned suicide bombing in Karbala.
And is this the women?
Yeah, the women being trained as suicide bombers.
Okay, so why isn't that sufficient?
Well, I think it's not sufficient because you'll have to look at what's in back of it. First of all, we don't know whether the secretary herself relied on it. It's utterly implausible for several reasons. One is the U.S. military was present at the bases. It would have known if this kind of training was going on.
Okay, well, doesn't that offend what PMOI said that?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because I think what Judge Randolph was thinking about there was the question of making
a
decision, credibility decisions.
You're suggesting that we can say the evidence is not plausible, right?
I'm suggesting that. Yes, if this.
But it said.
Taken on its face.
Our only function is to see whether the secretary, on the face of things, had enough evidence before her to reach the conclusion.
Right, but I would ask several
questions.
Her
conclusion might be mistaken, but that depends on the quality of the information.
Well,
I mean, we're bound by this language.
First of all, I don't think you're bound by that language for several reasons.
Why is it dictum? You mean because why is it dictum?
It's dictum because the decision in that case was based on the public record. There was overwhelming evidence of active military operations by PMOI. It didn't matter what the standard. It didn't matter what the standard of review was. The result would have been the same. It's also the case that there was no consideration given to the First Amendment concerns, which normally call for heightened review by the court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was written at a stage where, under the facts, it appeared that the organization had no due process rights, whatever.
Right, but
no
it still had. Well, that's what was said. But it still had statutory rights, and the court was talking about the statutory rights.
And the court analogy says they're APA-like, as I recall.
Yeah, APA-like review,
right.
Yes.
Right.
And under
the
APA.
The statement about no judgment whether the material is true or is not true is consistent with our standard review.
Right, but you don't. But you still look at whether a reasonable decision maker could,
right.
could rest on that factor. And here, the Karbala bombings allegation makes no sense. It's not at all related to any policy or objective of PMOI. Nobody can leave Camp Ashraf without a military escort from the U.S. military. We don't even know whether the secretary herself relied on it. It's just listed there. Now, you may know from the classified information, but I think the court, in making the decision whether a reasonable decision maker could rely on this and whether it constitutes substantial evidence, I think the court can undertake a judgment. It's a limited judgment. We're not asking you to second-guess the secretary on debatable points. We're asking you to look at something, and if it's absurd on its face, are not credible, to discount it.
All right, if there are no more questions, we'll give you a couple minutes in reply.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Mr. Letter?
May it please the Court, I'm Douglas Letter from the United States Department of Justice, and we here urge that the petition be denied. With me at council table, Deputy Assistant Attorney General Beth Brinkman from the Civil Division and Ileana Chibanu from the National Security Division at the Justice Department. I just want to remind the Court I'm delivering this argument in this public forum, and obviously we'll try to answer all the Court's questions in a public way. If the Court has any questions that require getting into the classified material, then we would go into a closed session. And I ask certain questions, it may be I ask your indulgence to give me a moment to make sure I'm not disclosing anything that I should not. The Secretary here was looking at a petition for revocation of a designation of an organization that for at least 30 years has been engaged in terrorism, violence, assassinations, et cetera, as found by the Secretary based often on the PMOI's own statements. And by the way, I apologize in advance if sometimes I say MEK, we use those words, the PMOI and MEK interchangeably. So we have an organization that four times was designated by the Secretary of State.
But this decision has to be based on the record before the Secretary now, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And it's in the present tense. It's current conditions, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So it really doesn't make any difference how many times it's been designated in the past.
Your Honor, I think it does in this sense.
Why is that?
Remember that we're talking about here a petition for revocation of a designation because the claim is changed circumstances. So obviously the Secretary must consider what were the circumstances before.
But the question is still the same. In question of intent, does it have the current intent?
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And again,
so it really doesn't. I mean, you could have an organization that was clearly intended to be a terrorist 2 years ago, and now there's absolutely no evidence for it, and you wouldn't deny it because they previously intended to engage in terrorist activities.
I agree with Your Honor. And again,
I don't think the past really is relevant here.
Again, Your Honor, I like to disagree on that because if we're talking about changed circumstances, we have to know, the Secretary has to determine, is it reasonable to believe that, in fact, the system has changed? So in that limited context.
In other words, is it reasonable to believe that they no longer have an intent or capability?
That is correct, Your Honor.
That's the same question.
I'm not going to quibble anymore.
Let me just ask you a procedural question. Okay,
yes, Your Honor.
About this. As I understand the record here, well, let me ask you this. You agree that under our case law, NCRI 1, the organization's entitled to have an opportunity to respond, to see the unclassified record and respond to it, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Did that happen here?
Yes, Your Honor.
When?
In a different way from the situation involving designations.
Uh-huh.
There are several factors, and in answering your question, I just asked the Court to keep in mind, as this Court and the Supreme Court have said, due process is a flexible concept.
Well, we'll find out how flexible,
exactly.
Depending on how you answer your question, okay?
I believe it's flexible.
Flexible does not include no opportunity to review
correct.
The
that
unclassified
is correct.
Information.
And what
okay.
the situation here is, remember, we're dealing with a revocation of an existing designation under a new statutory scheme. So emphasize that the scheme changed with the amendment to the statute. The Secretary.
That was before the January 09 decision, correct?
That's right. What happened
okay,
is.
So did they have any. Well, let me ask you this. You say in your brief that. Let me ask you the question about the October 08 meeting. Do you know what happened at that meeting?
Yes, Your Honor.
And were they given any unclassified information at that point?
Not really, Your Honor.
Okay.
We weren't in a mode right. of presenting to them evidence saying we were asking them to provide as much evidence
okay.
as possible.
And then you say in your brief that they were informed of the Secretary's decision, quote, in advance.
They were informed right. Shortly before it was published in the Federal Register and before.
The day before?
Yes, and before they brought suit.
Right.
We provided them with the unclassified material that we had at that point.
At that time. And yes. when did you do that? Was it before the suit was filed?
Yes, it was before the suit was filed.
Now, what about the supplementary unclassified materials?
That was later because when they brought the lawsuit, we under this court's rules, we have an obligation to provide as much unclassified material as possible. Right. So we went back to the State Department and we said, under this court's rules, we have to get the intelligence community to engage in a declassification review.
Okay.
This is extremely difficult and time-consuming process.
I understand.
And so that's what, over the course of time, that is exactly what we did. And we then made a judgment as we got certain material declassified. We provided that to the petitioner's attorneys as fast as we could, and then we did a final version that was before their reply brief.
Okay, but
was filed.
I understand that. That's what I understand the record to be also. But under NCRI 1, shouldn't the organization have an opportunity to respond to that information?
And several answers, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. If I may, yes and no. Yes, but... they did have an opportunity to respond in the sense, two possibilities. One, they could have gone back to the secretary, or in this lawsuit, they have a chance to respond.
Didn't it come out during the briefing?
Most of the information. Yeah.
The supplementary information.
Right. Most of the information came out before they even brought the lawsuit.
But my point is not to respond. Not an opportunity to respond here in this court, but an opportunity to respond to the secretary.
Right.
To try to convince the secretary that the supplementary information doesn't support what the secretary thinks it supports.
Right. And we gave them, as I say, before the lawsuit was filed, all of the unclassified information that we had.
I'm only asking about the supplementary unclassified material that was made available during the briefing.
Right, and as I say, that was only the result of a further process that we went through. Yes, Your Honor.
But so, shouldn't at that point the government under NCRI 2 or 1 have given them an opportunity to say, well, look, we've got all this additional unclassified information. You should have an opportunity to address this to the secretary to see if it changes the secretary's mind.
Several responses, Your Honor. First, if they had wanted to submit something to the secretary, we would not have rejected it. Uh-huh. But second, more important, as you can see, if there was any procedural error at all here, it would be clearly harmless because, as Your Honors know from the record that we submitted to you, the overwhelming material here remains classified. The amount of material, the extra material that was provided to them because of the declassification review is actually very minor. So it could not have made a difference.
Well, you take the position, don't you, that the unclassified record is itself sufficient, right?
We are not arguing that, Your Honor.
Oh, you're not?
We believe that it would be appropriate for this court to consider the classified information. Mm-hmm. If I may, Judge Tatel, to complete mm-hmm. my answer to you, the reason why this is different from the NCRI situation and why this is sufficient due process is, remember, in the situation being faced at the NCRI case was under the prior version of the statute where every 2 years the designation automatically lapsed. That meant that the agency itself would engage in a process to determine if the designation should not lapse. So the agency would gather material, and then NCRI required that if the organization had a domestic presence, that material would be provided in advance if the entity was being considered for redesignation. This situation is now different. The designations do not lapse anymore. Every 5 years, the secretary has an obligation to look at the material again and determine if things have changed. There's no judicial review of that decision. That's what the statute expressly provides. There is judicial review if instead the entity files a petition for revocation. The reason I'm going into this is it means there is no process, there's nothing in advance that the agency has put together. It is purely in a reactive mode here to a petition for revocation. And the statute requires that the agency act within 180 days of the petition. This is a problem if we go through the declassification process, because that takes a very long time, especially given everything that's going on now with requirements in the Guantanamo habeas litigation, et cetera, that material must be reviewed by the intelligence community. So we're in a situation that really is, in some very important ways, different from what this court was facing in the NCRCRI situation. We don't have some unclassified record developed in advance that we can then easily give to the entity. Here, again, the process is only triggered not just when the entity files its petition, but when it provides the material. We tried here to take care of any due process concerns, one, by meeting with them. Two, they submitted after that meeting thrice. They submitted more material, which the secretary accepted and put in the record. And then as soon as as possible, we provided the overwhelming majority of the declassified information to the entity before the time for filing a suit even had run. So that was how we attempted to take care of the due process rights of this organization.
What is it that starts the 120 days that you referred to?
The filing of the petition, Your Honor. Yes, the petition for revocation. Right. There is no, otherwise, the only other period in the statute now is, as I say, every 5 years the secretary does her own internal review, which I'll emphasize again, is not subject to judicial review.
I mean, I suppose that an organization applying for that might be ready to, I assume it's a waivable entitlement, to waive it if in exchange for actually getting the basis of the decision and being able to respond to it.
That is entirely correct, Your Honor. And indeed, in this situation, we don't have any, looked back through the files, we don't have any indication that the organization during that period asked for the unclassified information. And more important, directly answering your question, Judge Williams, the organization made clear that it believed it was important that the agency meet the 180-day deadline. So this was not a situation where the agency was, where the petitioner was coming to us and saying, look, we understand this can take a while, so take more time and give us all the unclassified material that you have.
Do we know whether the Secretary's decision rests on just the classified information or on the record as a whole? Do we know that?
Here, Your Honor, we urge that you look at the record as a whole.
No, but I was asking about the Secretary's.
Oh, the Secretary's decision, that is based on the record as a whole,
Your Honor. The record as a whole, okay.
Yes.
Suppose you had, this is a hypothetical, okay?
Yes.
Not this case.
You don't want me to say that's not this case, Your Honor?
Yeah. I thought we could eliminate that.
You're preempting that answer,
Your Honor? We can eliminate that response.
Okay.
Suppose you had a case where the classified record was really close. Could go either way, okay?
Yes.
And assume further that the organization had a really good, convincing response to the unclassified record, okay?
Yes.
In other words, the organization, had it had an opportunity, could have convinced the secretary that there's serious problems with the unclassified record and that it really doesn't show what the secretary thought. Isn't it possible that that showing might influence how the secretary viewed the close classified record?
I will concede that is possible, yes, Your Honor.
So isn't that why it's important that the organization always have an opportunity to at least respond in a timely fashion to the unclassified stuff? Because it always could affect the secretary's how the secretary views the classified information.
Your Honor, I think that is within the realm of possibility, yes. However, again, we have to balance all of the factors and that play in here to this process. And in this instance, in this specific case, we have a situation where it is clear that it was the classified material that is key.
Well, we don't know that. You just told me we don't know what the secretary, we're reviewing the secretary's decision.
Well,
the Secretary may have relied on the unclassified information also.
Except that here, Your Honor, it is clear when you look at the material, the evidence...
That's your harmless error argument, right?
Part of harmless error, but I think more than that, if you look at the material, you can see that overwhelmingly the evidence that is discussed in the summary of the administrative record is discussed in any depth. And
you mean because of all the gaps?
Yeah.
What would happen? I get your point about the 180 days now. So what's the organization to do? During the briefing, they get a big supplementary unclassified record, right?
Yes.
So what should they have done? Should they at that point have gone back to the Secretary?
That would be perfectly appropriate, Your Honor. They could go back to the Secretary.
And what would
say,
have happened to this case?
This, as I understand this court's proceed, the way this court has announced the proper procedures, then the case, I believe, is put on hold because there would be a reconsideration before the agency. Obviously, the statutory provision for judicial review, they would have to file a petition for review to invoke this court's jurisdiction. Right. But then I believe it would be put on hold, and the Secretary could make a determination one way or the other. Again, in this case, it is clearly that there would have been no need for that because the key material is classified. And if I may, on just a couple of points that my friend Mr. Fry made, Mr. Fry said that it was dictum in the first PMOI decision. I don't see how it can be dictum if it's the court setting out the standard of review. But I'd just like to note that same language was then said again by this court in the opinion written by then Judge Roberts. I believe Judge Williams, you were on. No, I'm sorry, Judge Henderson.
I was on the first panel.
I'm sorry.
I was on the first panel.
You were on the first, and Judges Henderson and Williams have been on a batch of these. Judge Henderson was on that panel. It was re-emphasized there. In addition, Judge Williams, you were on the panel, Kahana Chai, the 466 Fed Third 125, and there this court reiterated those standards at pages, particularly page 131.
As I recall, we left completely open what might be required by the due process clause. Let me see if I can. Petitioner's challenge is a denial of due process, the Secretary's use of classified information. We need not resolve that claim, for in this case, we can uphold the designations based solely on the unclassified.
Except that, Your Honor, this court has made that a holding of the court in the NCRI 1 decision, where the court there was clearly not dictum. The court was ordering the State Department to provide further proceedings, and it made clear there that it was not ordering, even though that was the case where this court held that there were due process rights. The court made clear it was not ordering, and in fact it said, as I recall, it could not order disclosure of the classified information. And then this court picked up on that in the very analogous situation in the Holy Land Foundation case involving designations under executive order and IEPA statute. And this court said that there the court could take into account classified information, which it did in upholding the designation there, and it cited specifically to the AEDPA precedents. So it is clearly the law of this circuit. My friend Mr. Fry mentioned these other instances where the Secretary of State said she was looking at looking at 2 years. That was under the prior version of the statute where the designation automatically lapsed after 2 years. And so obviously at that point it was key what had happened in the past 2 years. We're not under that regime anymore. This is a different statutory scheme as I've indicated. I'm just looking at my notes. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. In looking at the classified material, are we to be indifferent to matters of plausibility? Are we to be indifferent to matters of the Secretary's apparent commitment to any particular source? I mean, is all that, if the Secretary said, Chicken Little told me, we'd follow that, say that's fine. Your Maybe Honor, hearsay, but...
Right. As this court has made clear, hearsay is perfectly...
As we do in ordinary ad right. law cases.
Right. Your Honor, I think I would answer this. I think indifferent is too strong a word. I don't think we would urge the court to be indifferent because, as we have stated and as this court has stated, you do have to find that there is substantial support. If you were totally indifferent and therefore the evidence were in some strange case ridiculous, it's hard to believe that a Secretary of State would ever do that. But if she ever did, this court wouldn't be indifferent. But as the members of the panel noted earlier, this court has said on several occasions, you're not looking to see even whether the Secretary may be wrong. That is not the function.
Let me try. That's against standard in ad law review.
And it is the APA standard, but here you've
here made, here it really means something different.
You've made clear you've written if I add Kahanakai, you've written five opinions now on the judicial review in this statute, and you have emphasized a number of occasions that you're not looking to weigh whether the Secretary was correct or incorrect in relying on certain information. You said that very clearly.
Yeah, but that's not inconsistent with requiring the Secretary to at least appear to make some sort of sifting process, right?
I agree, Your Honor. And again, I think that is definitely part of your obligation to look for if the information is substantial. But we think this court has gotten it completely right in the past five decisions on this statute, and we're very comfortable with the way this court has described the standard review. Judge Tatel,
let me ask you a refined version of a more specific version of Judge Williams' question. One of the pieces of evidence in the unclassified record here is an allegation that the organization had plans to attack the international zone in Baghdad, right?
That's
in the unclassified section. And as Mr. Fry pointed out, that report says this: the ultimate sources of the information was unknown. That's what it says, was unknown. And as such, their access to veracity and motivations were unknown. The veracity of the information was undetermined. Now, when we're looking at the record, do you think our standard review permits us to say evidence of that kind is less probative, less valuable, and Secretary can't rely on that kind of evidence if there's too much of it?
A couple of responses, yeah. Your Honor. First, and if you indulge me, I want to be extremely careful in what I say. My memory is that in the full summary, and then you'll notice in our briefing, this was not emphasized. This incident was not anything that was
No, I agree
discussed.
With that.
Okay.
I'm just asking.
Okay.
I understand your point. You might say we don't really have to care about it because nobody really relied on it. But let's assume that there were several of these, and it looked to us like the Secretary's decision may well have rested on this kind of evidence.
Right.
What would we do?
Your Honor, I think then you walk a bit of a tightrope and in a way this relates to my answer to Judge Williams. I think on the one hand, as you've noted, it's not your job to say, the Secretary, what an idiot, we can't believe she relied on that. But on the other hand, if, as you say, if
by the way, we do reach decisions like that with lots of agencies.
You use slightly
not
different,
unusual.
I think you use slightly different words, Your Honor.
Yeah.
But again, you do have an obligation to determine something substantial. So if in the hypothetical it's a situation where, let's say, that's all the Secretary had and she herself were therefore indicating her own doubts, that would certainly factor into this court's consideration. I'm fairly confident that we would never come to the court with a case like that because these reviews are done extremely seriously by the State Department by statute in conjunction with
what would you think about a decision from a court, again, when I'm talking about hypotheticals,
yes,
which looked at a record containing several of these and remanded it to the Secretary with instructions to tell us what weight was given to that kind of evidence? If we couldn't tell.
I think that that is within the authority of this court. Now, if I may add just a little bit to your hypothetical.
Your next sentence is going to be, but that's not this case, right?
No, I wasn't going to say that, Your Honor. But I'm going to say something close to that, which is, could we, if the hypothetical is that that's all there is, then it would seem to me a remand might be perfectly appropriate, and we have no objection to this court in circumstances like that saying to the secretary, as is appropriate under admin law in general, we need more explanation. But if instead, if we have that as part of your hypothetical, is there's other evidence.
I understand.
Okay.
In other words, it may not be necessary to do that.
Exactly.
It may be obvious from the record.
That's right. In fact, I'm not even sure it'd be error at all. The secretary has 10 facts and she discusses, and she says these three I've got doubts about. I don't think it would be error then, Your Honor.
Not precisely, perhaps.
Okay.
Judge Tatum,
no, I'm done. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honors. And if the court wishes to go into closed session, we're willing to do so.
Anytime. All right. Why don't you take 2 minutes?
Okay. Now we're at the blind man's buff part of the argument.
We were always at that stage.
Well, not with Mr. Letter. He's not the blind man in this show. I don't know what's in the classified record, but I have several reasons to suspect there isn't really a lot there, notwithstanding Mr. Letter's characterization of it as overwhelming. One is the POAC and English Court of Appeals decisions, which of course are not controlling here. But it's hard to believe that they didn't have a very similar record, and the English Court of Appeal actually concluded that the classified portion of the record reinforced their decision. The second thing is that the Secretary said at the conclusion of her opinion that the circumstances basically are such that maybe the Secretary shouldn't even wait 2 years to reevaluate this question. And I find it hard to believe if there was overwhelming evidence that this organization was committed to terrorist activities that it would say that. Now, I think to take the Carbell.
That's almost certainly true, but it doesn't help us very much, right? Because the
secretary
could reach her current conclusion on balance.
She could, and of course,
we're. Position is unsupported. Or
we're not suggesting that this court is in a position of second guessing the secretary or redoing the decision, but it's like an administrative law proceeding generally. You look to ask whether a reasonable decision maker on this record could have reached the conclusion that it did. Let me say about the October 8th meeting, I'm told we were not provided any classified information. The meeting was held at our request. And as for an opportunity to respond, the first question is whether the record provide substantial support for a reasonable decision maker to reach the question that the secretary did. Otherwise, we would like an opportunity to respond, and we would like some more information about what the classified record shows that I think can be provided without violating the classification.
Well, you always have, Mr. Letter just said when I asked the question, you always have the opportunity to do that. You don't need our permission to.
Well, I'm not aware. I was interested to hear Mr. Letter's proposal. Uh-huh. We had 30 days to file our petition for review. We did not want this review delayed. We're anxious. This is a time of ferment in U.S. policy toward Iran. We are a significant player in this whole topic. We're anxious to be able to speak in the United States on this subject and participate in the debate and to have our supporters not chilled. And one final thing I'll say about judicial review, and I see that my time is up, is the congressional amicus brief shows that Congress thought that the judicial review was meaningful and important protection for these First Amendment concerns that are involved. Not that you were basically to be a rubber stamp and to abdicate any responsibility for review. And I think that the statements that have been made before should not be interpreted to go as far as perhaps you suggested they go. I thank Your Honors.
All right, thank you. We are going to go into classified, so please clear the courtroom.
Stand, please.